I wonder if you find trusting God easy. Yes, no, yes. Some of you think yes. I don't, always. I don't find trusting God easy, particularly when you are faced with huge obstacles in life and personal difficulties. If you just reflect, all of us in this room will have known bereavement, I guess, or sickness, or loss, or disappointment, or sickness, all of those things. They're part and parcel of our human lives. And the fact of Jesus in the wilderness is that God didn't remove him. He went through that experience, didn't he? He was in the wilderness. He was in the garden. He was crucified on the cross. He tasted human life in its full shade, really. And he suffered certainly the bitterness of it. And we need to acknowledge that. We must never reduce Christian faith to a kind of trust in Jesus and everything will be coming up roses, because it isn't like that. And God never promised those things to us. Jesus said to his disciples, in this world you will have trouble, and I've prayed for you. And I often think, well, Jesus, don't just pray for me, do something about it. But actually, God's economy, God's picture, God's vision of your life is far greater than the momentary trials that we are undergoing. God has an eternal perspective, and he's got wonderful things in store for those who trust in him. And that must give us great hope and great faith. And I just want to ask a really simple little question. What helped Jesus cope with the wilderness? What was it? I guess you could say that there are lots of things. Of course, prayer and the presence of God and the attendance of the angels. It's really interesting in Mark's gospel, the event that happens just, we've had it read to us, the event that happens just before Jesus goes into the wilderness. And this is the event. In those days, Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. When he came out of the water, immediately he saw the heavens being torn open and the Spirit descending like a dove, on him like a dove, and a voice came from heaven, "You are my beloved Son, with you I am well pleased." And immediately, Mark's gospel is very fast-paced. He's whisked off by the Spirit into the wilderness. You would think, wouldn't you, this moment of great blessing would lead to a kind of a period of great ecstasy in his life and success, but it wasn't. Jesus went from this great mountaintop into the desert, spiritually speaking. What was it, I wonder, that really kind of fed Jesus and nurtured him through this really difficult time? Well, I just want to say some really simple things. The first simple thing is, he was God the Father's Son. God the Father's Son. You are my beloved Son, God the Father. And there's something fundamental about this, really. And in the same way that Jesus was spoken of as the Son of God, we too are spoken of as God's children. There's this wonderful verse that I'm... Who's going to come and read it to me? I think... Rosie as well, I think, and Joe. Yep, you're going to come and read. She's just going to read these words to us. Thank you. Do you want to do it? You can do it from down there if you like. Is that all right?
John chapter 3, verse 1.
See what great love the Father has lavished over us, that we should be called children of God.
Thank you. That was really well read. Thank you, Rosie. Hey? Okay. You can sit there if you like, yeah, or whatever, yeah? Second reading. So, we are God's children. The love that God has lavished on us that we should be called children of God. And that means lots of things, so that the implications of that are huge. Not just that we can call God Father, but it gives us, in a sense, unique access to God. So in those difficult desert times, we can be confident in God's fatherly care because we are his children. It's as basic as that. There's a lovely little story here that illustrates how having access to God is a unique thing for his children.
A young soldier fighting for the Union Army in the American Civil War lost both his father and his brother in the fighting. He needed to return to his family's home and help his sister, an elderly mother, with the spring planting on their farm. And so he went to Washington, D.C. to ask the president for exemption from military service. When he arrived in Washington, he walked straight up to the doors of the White House and asked to speak directly with the president. A young official standing guard told him, "You can't see the president. The president's far too busy to see you. Get back out there and fight like you're supposed to." So the young soldier left the White House, not knowing how he would break the bad news to his family. As he was sitting on a nearby park bench, a young boy came up to him and said, "Why are you so unhappy? What's wrong?" The soldier looked at the boy and began to pour out his heart. He told the child that since his father and brother had been killed, he was the only man left in his family. He was desperately needed back at the farm, and the only person who could make it possible was the president himself. The little boy said simply, "Come with me." Taking him by the hand, the boy led the soldier back around to the White House. They walked through the back door, past the guards, past the generals, past the high-ranking government officials, until they got to the president's office. The little boy didn't even knock on the door. He just opened it and walked in. There, standing behind the desk, studying battle plans with the Secretary of State, was President Abraham Lincoln. The president looked up and said, "Oh, what can I do for you, Tad?" The little boy replied, "Dad, this man needs to talk to you."
Whether that's a true story or apocryphal, who knows? I reckon it's probably apocryphal, but it's good. It's good because what that tells us as God's children in the midst of our struggle and difficulty, and particularly I want to say to you this morning, if you are wrestling with something, if you're having a hard time, you don't do it as a stranger, you do it as a child of God. And you could be conscious of his presence with you. The next thought, what will help us? Well, Jesus was loved. "This is my beloved son, my beloved son, with whom I'm well pleased." See the great love that God has lavished on us. The great love that God has towards you. And that fundamental Christian thought that God is love and that he loves you is sometimes the very thing that's really deeply challenged in our lives. Because we do the kind of maths, don't we? This is happening, that's happening, equals God doesn't love me. But if we look at Christ, the precious Son of God, his suffering didn't signal God's lack of love. Now, God is doing something much bigger in our lives. I love this quote from Victor Hugo from Les Miserables, the book. And he said this: "The supreme happiness of life is the conviction that we are loved. Loved for ourselves. Say rather, or otherwise, loved in spite of ourselves." It's quite a thought, isn't it? That you are loved. Not because you're lovable, but you are. But all of us are flawed. None of us have got our ducks in a row. We're all a bit of a mess in one way or another, seeking to find God's grace in our lives day by day. But you are loved. Get that in your head and your heart. So when you're in the desert, when you're facing challenges, that core conviction will anchor you in God's love. The second thought, the father was pleased with him. It's always oft said, but it's often a really important point to make. "You are my beloved son, with you I am well pleased." It's often said that this was said to Jesus before he did anything, right at the beginning of his ministry. Because for us, we so often attach our blessedness or our worth, our value to the things that we do. If I've been successful, if I've done a good job, if I've got my laces tied up properly and my tie buttoned up, metaphorically speaking, if I'm a good boy, then God is going to love me and bless me. If I'm a bad boy, then I'm out. Well, actually, it doesn't. The Bible never says that. Actually, we have a gospel of grace that while we were still sinners, the Bible says, Christ died for us. That God deals with us on the basis of his mercy and his grace, not our worthiness or rightness. So if you have a righteousness of your own this morning, or if you're trying to kind of develop one for yourself, I'm going to get right I'm going to do this, I'm going to do the other. When I'm in the right position, then God will love me. Well, just forget it. Accept the grace and forgiveness and mercy of God this morning that comes to you out of his love. God was pleased with Jesus before he did anything. Do you think it's possible for God to be pleased with you? Everything inside you screams, no! You don't know what I'm like inside. You don't know what I'm like. I'm a mess. All of those kind of things go through our mind. God sees our heart and loves us all the same. So I want to say to you this morning, the most fundamental way in which you can trust Jesus this morning is to come to him. Hold your hands up and say, Lord, I need you. Help me. Let me know your love. Let me know your fatherhood. Let me know your pleasure upon my life. And when we allow that stuff, those thoughts, those truths to sink into our lives, it's like putting a tiger in your tank. Your life will be transformed by the love of God, not just trying harder. So we can learn those lessons from Jesus this morning.